Dwelling on Chochmah Aleph by the Mishnah, and an interesting Mishnah it will be, actually, an interesting Mishnah and a rather interesting Gemara, a little bit today and mostly the next couple of days on it.
In which sense?
You'll see. Mishnah says, Ad Shelah Nimchaka Megillah, up until the point when the Megillah has been erased, when the ink's been dissolved into the water, Omra Edi Shoseh, during that time she says, I'm not going to drink, and as we learned yesterday, the different possibilities, she might be calm when she's saying it, she might be trembling, whatever it is, she says, I don't drink, I'm not going to drink, that's the equivalent of saying, I'm guilty, I'm tamei, Megillah and Gnezes, therefore the Megillah is put in Gneza. And her mincha, which now is not valid as a mincha anymore, you can't even use it as another mincha because no other mincha is made out of barley flour, gets scattered on the ash, on the ash pile. Namely, Rashi says, there are actually three different places where they burn kodshim that became posel. One of them is in the Azara for kodshim that are supposed to remain in the Azara that became posel. A mincha is one of those, because a mincha has to be eaten by the kohenim in the Azara. Therefore, in this case, where it became possible because she effectively admitted her guilt, and therefore there's no need for a mincha anymore, then that gets scattered. Scattered on that pile. What it is actually it actually gets burnt, and the ashes of it are scattered on that pile.
It's on the
Mizbeach? No, it's not on the Mizbeach. It's someplace else in the Azara. They have a depository for certain kinds of korbanos that became possible. There's another one in the Harabayis, elsewhere in the Harabayis, and there's a third one outside of Yerushalayim. For our purposes, what's important is the one in the Azara. So they get scattered over there, and actually Kerlo Remez says, why didn't the Mishnah just say straight out it's burnt? Because the point is they make a more public thing out of it by not just burning it, but scattering it. They like to make it well known that in this case it's possible, and that they burn it and then they scatter the ashes on the pile over there. You want people to see, I guess, that she really was admitted to being guilty, and there's no social thing going on. But that's just, I mean, part of it might be because, like this, not everybody is going to know what happened over there. Some people are going to see that afterwards she's healthy and alive and healthy, and they're going to say, hey, you know, well, you know, we, you know, what happened? Obviously, the soda water doesn't work. Like this, we make it clear that, yeah. When we say to him, Megillah and Gneza, it's a bit of an interesting thing. Rashi says that it's put Bitside HaHechel, on the sides of Hechel. However, Tosfos brings a girsa from the Yerushalmi that's not Bitside, but rather Tziroi. That you put it under the hinge pin of the door of the Hechel. Doors in those days were made, we've learned about this before in Dayfen and some other places, doors in those days didn't have hinges on the sides like they do now. They had a pin on top and a pin on bottom that went into holes in the lintel and in the doorstep. They had one that went in with more tightly and one that went in more loosely. They were sort of a little bit like Lego doors, let's say. So therefore, the idea would be they'd put this Megillah under in the hinge hole over there, and as the door turned, it would gradually get rubbed out. Which gets into a big question. A bunch of Mepharshim on the Yerushalmi asked the question, how are you allowed to erase something that was written with the Eivishter's name in it? So one of the Mepharshim on the Yerushalmi wants to say that maybe the Yerushalmi doesn't agree that there's such an Isser. Difficult to say, but okay, there are other Achronim talk about, there's a Tshuva about it from one of the Achronim, who argues that since the whole, it was written to begin with the purpose of erasing it into the water in order to test the Sota, therefore, effectively, it was written based on a Tnai. If we need it for the Sota, then it has Kedusha. If it turns out we don't need it in the end because she admits before it gets erased, then it has no Kedusha at all. And he uses it, by the way, he uses this as a precedent to discuss the question of, like, proof sheets. Of
the name of Hashem has no kedusha.
That's the point. If you write it without the intention to give it kedusha, then okay, maybe it's only osim midrabanan to erase it. So these tshuvas, I don't remember the name of them now, talks about the relevance of this to, you have things like galley proofs of sfarim, which are, you know, they're only printed in order to check them for mistakes. But nowadays you have photocopies and things like that. Things like that, where not necessarily are they made to begin with, are they meant to be learned from? They're only made, you know, in this case, the proofs, for example, they're only made as a, you know, to be able to check them for mistakes, and then based on this, maybe you could argue they don't have real kedusha. Well, this is Kavashuri, of course, yeah. Not necessarily does it make such a difference, because theoretically, arcsav, the like we use in Gemara and Sidurim and whatnot, no, it's not actually, but, well, similar to Velish Ksav, it's similar to Sfardi Ksav, not exactly, but still, it probably would be kosher, at least most of the letters in it would be kosher for a Sefer Torah, you know? So therefore, it would have, Lechura would have the same din as Ksav Ashuri, but I don't know. Okay. Ksav Ashuri is the script they use in Sefer Torah. Okay. Anyway, to continue. The Ein Megillah Sekshera Lahashkas Basoita Acheres. Her Megillah is not kosher to give another soita to drink with, because it has to be written Lishma. Another case, Nimchaka Megillah. What if the Megillah was already erased? V'omra Tmei Ani, and then she says, I'm Tamei. Well, we still don't force her to drink, because she said outright, I'm Tamei. Hamayim Nishpachin. So again, we pour out the water. The water itself doesn't have any Kedusha, even though the Eivish's name was erased into it. You would think maybe that gives it some Kedusha. No. You can just pour it away. Actually, Tosafos quotes from the Yerushalmi. The question is, maybe even the Yerushalmi asked the question: could you maybe use that water, let's say, to mix into cement? If it has no kedusha at all, it has a certain degree of kedusha. You can't use it for degrading thing like that, but you can pour it away. Woman chasim es bazeres habeis adeshin, and her mincha is scattered at the beis adeshin, same as before. Nimchaka Megillah v'omer eini shoy. So what if now the Megillah was erased, but then she says, I won't drink? She doesn't say, I'm Tomei, but she says, I won't drink. Then, as we said, I don't know, so Mashke knows about Kocha. So then we force her to drink it against her will, and we talked about yesterday the different cases. If she's saying that Machmas Bar Yusa calmly, or if she's saying that Machmas Resisa, if she said only, according to what we learned yesterday, according to Rabbi Akiva, anyway, this is only if she's trembling out of fear. Then we force her, then we try to convince her first, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, that don't worry, if you really are innocent, then go ahead and then drink it. And if even that is not enough, then we force her to. As opposed to, if she says, Machmas Bar Yosa, if she says, calmly, I won't drink, then that's the equivalent, even after Nimcha Kanagila, is the equivalent of saying, I'm Tomei. Okay, but still, maybe she's afraid it'll have some effect on her. Tosfos, by the way, also quotes from the Yerushalmi how much of it has to be erased before this. If she's trembling, then she should actually admit. If she really is Tomei, let her admit it. Okay, Tosfos, by the way, brings up the point: how much of it has to be erased before this comes into effect? And it mentions a brisa that's actually a machlokas the Shama Basil about it, where Basil says once two letters are erased. Why? Because two letters is enough space to write a name of Hashem, Yud Kei.
Two letters of the name?
Two letters, no, not necessarily of the name of Hashem, two letters of the scroll, of the Megillah. I don't know if that's related. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. She does not even have a chance to drink, or to finish drinking, actually, Rishami says. For if she's guilty, her face turns pale, green. So eyes start sticking out. She becomes full of veins, meaning that her veins, or gidim actually is a very broad term. It means nerves, it means veins, blood vessels, whatever. Whatever it is. They swell up, so that they start sticking out. So Rashi says specifically the veins in her cheeks, the veins or the nerves or whatever in her cheeks swell up and make it look like she's covered with veins. And Rashi quotes from Sifri in Shavitin Mizrachenbar. It makes it look like she has rods like just sticks under her skin. So he has it sticking out all over the place. The Heim Omrim, and people would say, Hotziua, take her out. She'll let the Tameh Hazorah. She shouldn't make the Hazorah Tameh. We'll talk about it on the base, what kind of Tumah we're afraid about. Im Yeshla Schus, now, if she has a Schus, what kind of Schus, the Gemara we'll talk about tomorrow, Hotza Tolala, then this would suspend the punishment for her. Even if she's guilty of Tumah, nevertheless, if she has a Schus, as we'll talk about tomorrow, then that suspends the punishment. She doesn't die right away.
That her face becomes.
We'll learn about that more on Chavez and Chav Gimel. We'll talk about that, whether she starts having any effect yet or not. Yesh schus to l'shana achas. There's one kind of schus that can suspend her punishment for 1 year. Yesh schus to l'beis shanim. Yesh schus to l'gimel shanim. Another kind that can operate for 2 years, and another kind that can operate for 3 years. No longer than 3 years. We'll talk about that in the Gemara. That we'll also talk about on Amud Beis. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi examples in Tanakh where we find all three. We find the case of a year of punishment being suspended for a year, 2 years, and 3 years. I saw an interesting vote brought from the Mitzvot David that he says, why? Because you have three kinds of mitzvahs. You have Ben Adam Lamakim, you have Ben Adam Lachaveri, which is better because you're not doing, not only you're doing what the Eivishter wanted, but you're also benefiting somebody else. And you have a mitzvah that benefits the Rabbim. Corresponding to that, you have 1 and 2 and 3 years. And he says further, those correspond to the three mitzvahs of a woman, Chala, Nida, and Adlachat Amer. Nida is basically Ben Adam Lamakim. Chala is Ben Adam Lachaveri because you give the Chala to the Kohen and he benefits from it. And Ner Shabbos, is a mitzvah that benefits the Rabbim, because Nerach of Ner Lemeir, you light one candle, and 100 people can benefit from it. Okay.
Neither Chala
or Ner. Yeah. Okay. Mikan Oma Ben Azai, based on this, that we're saying that a schus, which the Gemara is going to end up explaining, that the schus we're talking about is the schus of learning Torah, or being involved with Torah, based on this, Ben Azai said, Chayav Adam Olamad is Bitzvah Torah. A person is obligated to teach his daughter Torah. She im tishte, because this way, if she ends up drinking and she survives it,
but does that include a wife or husband?
Teaching his wife? Not necessarily. He's talking about a daughter.
Right.
But, yeah. Okay. She im tishte, if she ends up having to drink the soita water teda, shas chus toilala, then she'll know why is she okay afterwards, that the chus was able to suspend her punishment. Meaning, in other words, basically, where Yaakov explains, the vote is, on the one hand, you have the danger that she's going to think, okay, I have schus, I can get away with it. And she's not going to get away with it for forever. That was the Mishnah said that it has a deadline. But like this, at least other people, when they see her, survive it, will realize that, you know what, it must have been schus, but they're not, rather than thinking that, you know what, hey, the Meisota is worthless, which would be a very bad thing, because then you'd have other people could think they could get away with it.
That's, of course, if your husband himself is.
Yeah. Rabbi Eliezer says, no. Kolam alamed vitei Torah loim de tiflus. The ke'ilu we take out. The Gemara is going to put in the ke'ilu in the Mishnah. It doesn't belong. Rabbi Eliezer says, no. The person who teaches his daughter Torah is teaching her tiflus. Now, what is tiflus? Rashi says, so Rashi just says in the Farish for Gemara that the Gemara is going to explain it. Later on in the Gemara, Rashi explains that tiflus means thoughts of immorality, of znus. Now, what that means, we'll talk about in the Gemara. We're going to talk about in the Gemara tomorrow. We're going to get into what Rabbi Yezer is saying and what Rabbi Yeshua is saying. We have a lot to talk about. The Rambam has a different explanation. The Rambam says that tiflus basically means like silliness, like frivolity, like something that you're not going to take seriously.
Way.
A woman would rather have one calf and have tiflus than 9 calves and have precious abstention, being the abstaining. Now, what that means also, the Gemara is going to talk about tomorrow. But basically what we're going to say is, for example, that a woman would rather have the way Rashi explains it later. That you can have, for example, now we learned way back in Ksubas last year, that the different jobs have different frequencies of owner. You have, for example, a person who works in town has a more frequent owner, a person who's a sailor is expected to have an owner once every 6 months, a camel driver once every month, whatever it is. So a woman would rather have that her husband is earning less, is only earning a calf, and she has more tiflus. More time, more frivolity, like more personal time with her husband, more intimacy with her husband, than 9 cabin, where let's say he's going to become a sailor and make a lot more money, but there's going to be pressure, so there's going to be much longer periods of separation.
That's
what Rabbi Yeshua is saying. Rabbi Yeshua, since we mentioned tiflus, then Rabbi Yeshua is mentioning that actually tiflus, that there's a certain advantage to tiflus for a woman. Actually, the Meiri has an interesting explanation on this cab of tiflus, the test cabin of precious. He says it's actually talking about a woman, the pros and cons of a woman learning Torah. Rabbi Yeshua is pointing out, never mind the woman learning Torah, you know what? A woman may not want that her husband is going to become such a Talmud Chacham. She would rather have, he has one cab of learning and stays with her, rather than he ends up having 9 cabs of learning. And what happens, like the 70s Kain, what happens, Parshas Baloscha, when Moshe appoints the 70s Kainim and they all get Ruach HaKodesh, and then the Medrash says over there that Miriam is saying, you know, look how lucky they are, they all have Ruach HaKodesh, until Sephora tells her, you know, what a Rachmanus on their wives, they're going to end up separating from them like my husband separated from me. So in other words, the Meiri's point is that Rabbi Yeshua is saying even a woman doesn't even necessarily want her husband to be a great Talmud Chacham. How much more so, you can't put it on her to learn Torah. Who Hayah Omer? Rabbi Yeshua also used to say, Chosid Shoita, a chassid who was a fool, which we'll talk about in the Gemara on Chafez, what Rabbi Shuri used to say this, a chassid who was a fool, the Gemara will talk about this later on Chafez, the Rasha Arum, and a conniving Rasha, a Rasha who's sly about what he does, the Isha Prusha, and a woman who abstains, who makes herself like a great tzaddikus, like she's abstaining from Averis. Again, on Chafez, we'll talk about that a lot in a couple of days. Umakis Prushin, and the wounds of Prushin. Again, we'll talk about that there. Harei the Mazala Olam, these kinds of things wear out and destroy the world. What all this means, we'll talk about, well, the Gemara we'll talk about in a couple of days. The major place, you know, on Chafalas, the Gemara is going to talk about a lot this whole business of the pros and cons of women learning Torah. Just to mention, I mean, you know, to start with, there is, you know, first of all, the Rambam writes that this whole thing about Malamed Bita Torah, Malamed Tehillah, Malamed Tiflus, the Rambam says that only applies to Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebichtav, the Rambam says, yes, a man shouldn't necessarily teach his daughter Torah Shebichtav, but if he does, there's nothing wrong with it. It's not Malamed Tiflus. Having said that, though, various other Rishonim point out, first of all, you have to teach, women have to learn the halachas that they need to know. In fact, what everyone's talked about in a sikha, like Boimer of Tashin Nun, that ever talked about the whole pros and cons of this business of women learning Torah, that ever pointed out, you know, you have quite a few areas of halacha that women need to know, and that means they need to know the halachas quite deeply. That ever said, halavai all men should be as familiar with these halachas as women have to be. So first of all, there's that. Second of all, they also talk about that women do have to learn the parts of Torah that bring you to a greater Ava and Yira of the Eibishter, because after all, they have those mitzvahs just as much as men do. But that includes, for example, Pirkei Avos, includes other Sfarim of Musar and Chassidus and whatever. Third of all, of course, you do have, there's been various women in Jewish history who are famous for being very well-versed in Torah and Halacha. In the family of the Rebbeim also, the Friedrich Rebbe mentioned in Sefer HaZachronis that the Alter Rebbe's mother and grandmother and then sisters, I think it was, or aunts, I forget, were very well versed in halacha, so much so that there was one time when they actually were able to tell the men in the family what to do in a case where the Eruv broke and they all had gloves and other things. So there is that also. And then,
can they do that?
So that's the thing. So there are certain grounds for women learning. First of all, these are halachas they have to know. So there, you know, there is that ground. But there's also, you know, if a woman, we're talking about a man teaching his daughter as opposed to her learning on her own may not be a problem. She herself knows that it's not going to be for her. It's not going to be tiflus, for example. And then last of all is in the last 100 years or so, it became, you know, with changes in society, there came the point women are anyway being exposed to a lot more of the outside world. So therefore, the Chachamim, the Gdolei Yisrael of that time, and then starting actually with grassroots, starting with Sarah Shanira famously, started Beis Yaakov, and then a number of great Rabbonim of that time, including the Chafetz Chaim, strongly supported the idea. Yeah. Because one argument was I read that they asked Meir Shapiro, what about our Mishnah that Hamalamed Bita Torah Kilu Loim the Tiflus? He says they're already learning Tiflus. You're worried about the Kilu Loim the Tiflus. They're already learning the improper things out there. And then it talks about in the Sikha, by the way, that the positive angle, that I've always looked for the positive angle on things, the fact that we have formalized learning nowadays for women, it's not only a reaction to the fact that we're living in a different kind of society and therefore it's necessary. It's also that ever talks about because we're getting closer to Yemos HaMashiach when the Kevet, the Sefer Gever, therefore we start seeing the advantage of women in this nowadays also.
Reaching the point where the women don't need to be taught, they can themselves really.
Okay. Now, ultimately, you need it, Ever. Gemara says, "I'm going to be Hoda Amar Shmuel Meshum Rav Meir. Shayisi loy mitorah etz Rav Akiva. When I used to learn Torah by Rav Akiva, Rav Meir says, Shayisi mato kankantem l'seich adyoi. I used to put kankantem into my ink. Kankantem we talked about the other day in the Mishnah. It's a copper sulfate or iron sulfate. It's some kind of metal compound that you put it in ink and it makes it permanent. It makes it that you can't dissolve it. Right? Even if you erase it or dissolve it, some of it will always still stick to the parchment." The loy omer li davar, and Rav Akiva didn't say to me anything, that there's any problem with that. Shabasi etzer Rabbi Shmuel. Then when I went to Rabbi Shmuel to learn, omer li, he says to me, b'ni mamalachtecha, my son, what kind of work do you do? Amarti lo lavlo ani, I told him I'm a sofer. Lavlo is another word for sofer. Omer li b'ni, heve zahir, you have to be careful. Shemalachtecha, malachas shemayim hi, your work is a work of Hashem. Shebatachsu oisachas, a tatsu oisachas, if you leave out even one letter, or you add even one letter extra, in seisat amachar, with kalalim kula, you're destroying the whole world. Now, why is that? So there are Rishonim who say that we see from this Gemara that if a Sefer Torah is missing even one letter or has even one letter extra, it's possible. We do, in general, hold by that, although we actually make a distinction in Halacha, we don't fully accept that because we say it depends whether it changes the pronunciation or not. If you have, for example, a word like La'avisechem, which can be spelled either with or without the vav in the middle, if it's written with an extra vav, it doesn't totally passle the Sefer Torah. You can use it in a pinch. You should just fix it after Shabbos or whenever you're able to. Rashi, in fact, says that the Tchasa Oisachas or Tiyatza Oisachas is actually where it would change the meaning. There are cases where adding or taking away one letter can change the meaning in a way that makes it kfirah. For example, Bereshis Bara Elikim. If you put an extra vav there, Bereshis Baru Elikim, then Chas V'Shalom, you're saying the two gods created the world. If you have the pasuk V'Hashem Elikim Emes, if you take out the Aleph from Emes, what are you saying over there? V'Hashem Elikim Mes. Also, the Medrash brings a bunch of other examples, including a rather funny one, and including what I thought was a rather funny one. If you miswrite Kol Neshama to Hallel Kol Halleluka, if you accidentally write it as to Hallel. Anyway. So Omar Tiloy, so the mayor says, I said to Rabbi Shmuel, don't worry. Dover echad yeshli shani matzav osechad yoy. I have a certain substance that I put into my ink. But kankantem Shmuel, it's called kankantem. Now, what is that relevant to Rabbi Shmuel telling him about missing or extra letters? That's what Gemara is going to discuss in a minute. Omar Lee, so Rabbi Shmuel tells me, v'chimatilin kankantem osechad yoy. Are you b'chalal allowed to put kankantem in ink? The Torah says by Parashat Sota that you have to erase it, you have to dissolve it. It means it has to be a script that's able to be dissolved. Ah, so wait, let's learn the Gemara and then we'll talk about that. Okay, so first of all, let's understand Maiko Amalei or Maiko Mahadalei. What is Rabbi Shmuel telling Rabbi? Rabbi Shmuel tells him that you have to make sure you're not leaving out a letter or putting in a letter. So what does Kankantem have anything to do with it? Yeah. The answer is Hachakam Amalei. Rabbi Meir is telling Rabbi Shmuel as follows. Needless to say, you're worried that I might be missing out letters or putting in letters. Don't worry. I'm perfectly expert in chaseiros v'yaseiros. In fact, the Gemara mentions in Megillah that one time Reb Meir was in a play, he was in Estia, in a place where he was in an Estia for Purim. There was no Megillah over there, and he sat down and wrote a Megillah out by heart.
Really?
Estia is someplace in Asia Minor, someplace in modern Turkey. Anyway, so that you don't have to worry about. You don't even have to worry that, for example, when I write, I don't even have to worry that, let's say, a fly might come. Let's say, for example, I've written a dalid, and then a fly were to come and land on it and scrape away with its wings or its feet or whatever, some of the ink and turn the dalid into a resh. I don't have to worry about that. Because so that makes the ink permanent.
But it makes it immediately permanent?
Apparently enough that even that, yeah. Modern-day sofrim, that's why, with they make, since modern-day sofrim mostly use kankantem, yes, they usually do.
The old one, as it was in the times of...
No, so we say that in Rameh's time, he apparently was the only one. Most people wrote. So I mentioned yesterday or 2 days ago when we talked about Kankantem, Rashi and Rambam hold that the basic way that you make ink, and apparently this is the way most Sofrim made ink at the time of the Gemara, was basically you took soot, like from the inside of a lamp or whatever. You mixed it with oil, and the Rambam also mentioned tree gum and a couple of other ingredients, and you make ink out of that. It makes a very stable ink, but it also dissolves easily. Apparently, Reb Meir was the only one in his time who used this kankantem. Nowadays, most sofrim use an ink where one of the ingredients in it is kankantem. The other ingredients are gum and walnut juice. Also, it's a very stable black ink. Yeah. But I'm right. The halacha is that the ideal kind of ink is the carbon oil ink. You can use ink with kankantem. The main thing is it has to be black ink. It can't be any other color. Actually, nowadays they have the one problem with kankantem-based ink is it tends to rust, and then after a while it turns no longer black. It turns reddish. So nowadays they have different chemicals that they add to it to keep it stable. Yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, but the point, what I was saying is nowadays, when if Sofer make a mistake, they don't try to wipe it away while it's wet because of the cantantum in the ink. It won't. They wait till it's dry and they scrape it away. So thus far the Braisa. So the question is, Aini, is that so? So you're telling me, what is the Braisa saying? That Rabbi Akiva didn't object to using cantantum in ink, but Rabbi Shmuel did. How is that? Valtanya, we have another Braisa. Amar Meir, Ha'isi lo matoda etzer Rabbi Shmuel. It's the other way around. When I was learning Torah about Rabbi Shmuel, Ha'isi matoda cantantum lo sech adioi v'loi amali dover, I put cantantum into my ink and he didn't say any problem with it. Shabbosi etzer Rabbi Akiva, also alai, when I came to Rabbi Akiva, he said it's also. So, kashya shimush ha-shimush, kashya asra ha-asra. So you have a contradiction. The first braisa says the first shimush by Rabbi Akiva, then by Rabbi Shmuel. The second one says first by Rabbi Shmuel, then by Rabbi Akiva. And the first braisa says Rabbi Akiva was fine with it and Rabbi Shmuel objected. And the second braisa says the other way around. So, mishmash shimush ha-shimush like kashya. So, okay, you can say the two braisas as far as where the order in which he learned by the two tanoim is not a problem. Because Me'ikra also came to Rabbi Akiva. First, Rabbi Meir came to learn by Rabbi Akiva. Kivin de le'mati kamalive, but he wasn't able to understand. He wasn't able to fully understand what Rabbi Akiva is saying. What Rabbi Akiva is saying. Rashi gives an example that Rabbi Akiva, when Rabbi Akiva was teaching his students, for example, something that Tomei, he would read, he would say is Tahar, or vice versa, in order to sharpen up the Talmidim, in order that the Talmidim should say, hey, wait a minute, that can't be right, and show logically why that Rabbi Akiva himself would show logically why it's not so, and leave it up to the Talmidim to be able to figure out the real thing. So Rabbi Meir couldn't found that confusing. Therefore, also the command to Rabbi Shmuel, the Gemara. So first he went to Rabbi Shmuel to learn Gemara. Gemara, in Gemara terminology, Gemara over here means more like what we call Mishnayos, the basic facts. Once you have basic facts in hand, and even if Rabbi Akiva is telling you that what's really Tomei is Tahar, or vice versa, you'll be able to refer to the Mishnayos and the facts in your brain and know that that's not so, and be able to shlug them up. Harder also, like I made Rabbi Akiva Savar Svara, and then he went back to Rabbi Akiva to learn the Gemara way of to learn the Svaris, the Gemara way of learning. Why is the Mishnah says this is Tomei? Why is it Tomei? Etc. So therefore, okay, so putting the two brises together, so there was Rabbi Akiva, then Rabbi Shmuel, and then back to Rabbi Akiva. Ela Asra Asra Kasha, but you have a contradiction between the two brises. Which one said it's also for him to use Kankantan? Kasha. Okay, it's must of the Kasha. Now, continuing on this topic of Kankantim, so you mentioned that maybe it's only relevant for Parshas Saita. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Oimer Hoyer Rameyer. Rameyer used to say, Lakol Matilin Kankantim Mosech Avyoi. You can put Kankantim into ink for writing any part of the Torah, or Tfilin or Mezuzah. You can. Chutzbaz, Rameyer did that. Chutzmi Parshas Saita Bobad, except for the Parshas Saita, meaning not a separate Parshas Saita. Meaning, if when you're writing a Sefer Torah, when you come to the Psukim in Parshas Nasei that describe the Parshas Sefer, you have to switch to non-Kankantim ink, Rabbi Meir says.
In a regular Sefer Torah.
Actually, the truth is, that's what Rashi and Tosfos both say over here. Tosfos in Eruvin, where the Gemara is also brought, says differently, that according to Rabbi Meir, once we're saying that you cannot write Parshas Sota in a Sefer Torah with Kankantim ink, then automatically you cannot write any part of a Sefer Torah in Kankantim ink. Tosfos discusses over there whether it's because once we say that you have to, that the Parshas Sota has to be erasable, then so is the rest of it, or is it maybe Xeder de Rabbanon, so you might mix them up, whatever. The halacha obviously is not like that, because Sofrim nowadays do use Kankantim ink for everything. Oh, wait. Rabbi Yaakov says in the name of Rabbi Meir, it's actually Chutz Parshas Sota Shal Mikdash. The exception is the Parshas Sota as it's written in the Beis Mikdash, as a separate scroll when Kohen writes it, meaning not as part of a Sefer Torah. My binai, what's the practical difference? What's the underlying logic? The argument between the first version of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yaakov's version of Rabbi Meir is, are you allowed to take a Sefer Torah and cut out the portion that contains the words of Parsha Sota and use that for the May Sota? If you say that you can, then automatically any Sefer Torah has to be written, that part at least has to be written with non-Kankantim ink. Otherwise, you won't be able to dissolve it. If you say that you have to write it separately anyway, then you can write it in a Sefer Torah with Kankantim ink, not a problem, because you anyway can't use it in the Beis Mikdash, but only when you're writing it as a separate scroll, then you have to write it, yeah. I chose to discuss a bit the pros and cons. I mean, Rav Meir lived generations after Mei Sota went out of effect. Rav Yosef ben Zakkai, even when the Mishnah was standing, stopped them, as we'll learn in the last parak. And Rav Meir is a Talmud of a Talmud of a Talmud of Rav Meir. Of Rav Yosef ben Zakkai, because there were a lot of people who were being promiscuous, including the men, so therefore we'll learn about it in the last parak. So Tosfos discusses that, let's say, for example, fine, but you could still have, not Rav Meir himself personally, but let's say, for example, we said the other day that the Parashat Sota can only be written after the Sota has been administered or Shavua. But fine, let's say at that same time, the same time that a Sota's ritual is going on in the Mikdash, a Sota is in the middle of writing a Sefer Torah, he gets to that Parasha. So he ends up writing it, it so happens he writes it after she's been administered the Shavua. That's what we're discussing. Could you then cut out that piece and use it for the Sota? Okay, but the same way as the Eidrisha says, you can erase his name for the slave, but the Kedusha of the Sefer Torah doesn't really make that any different. Okay, the Hani Tanoi Ki Hani Tanoi. So the Machloikus between these two Tanoi, the two versions of what Rav Meir is saying, is the same as the Machloikus of the following Tanoi. This is what we're saying, whether you can cut out a piece from a Sefer Torah for it, is the same Machloikus as the following Tanoi. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Ein Megillah Sekreira L'Hashkas V'Sota Acheres. The Megillah of one Sota is not kosher to be used for another Sota, which is what we learned in the Mishnah. Rav Achi Bar Yoshia, I'm a Megillah Sekreira L'Hashkas V'Sota Acheres. Whereas Rav Achi Bar Yoshia said you can. So it sounds
used for one.
It hasn't been used for one. I mean, it was written for one, but it didn't end up getting used for her. Let's say she admitted she's Tomei or what have you. So then you can use it for another Sota. So that seems to be the same thing. If you say that you can use a piece from a Sefer Torah, that's the equivalent of saying, L'chura, the Gemara is assuming, that's the equivalent of saying that you can write it for one Sota and end up using it for another. However, the Gemara says, Amar Papa, Dilma Lohi, maybe not. That's not necessarily the same Machlokes. How come the Koma Tanakama Hosam? You know why the Tanakama is saying in this Braisa that we just quoted that you can't do that. You can't write a Megillah Sota for one woman and then end up using it for another. Ela kiven de intuk l'shum rachel, because it was pulled away for the sake of Rachel. Meaning, in other words, it was written specifically out of all the women in the world, it was written specifically with Rachel in mind. Therefore, lo hadra mintika l'shum Leah. Therefore, we can't now pull it away and re-designate it for Leah. Because when it was written to begin with, it was meant to be for Rachel to the exclusion of all other women in the world. But now we can't therefore go and include Leah, who was excluded to begin with.
So the Sefer has to have in mind.
That's what we're saying. Av a Torah b'stama, but a Torah is just written without anybody particular in mind. Maybe even Tanakama of this Braisa would agree that you could cut out a piece of a Sefer Torah and use it for either Leah or Rachel. And Omer of Nachli, it took Dumaloi. Here's another way that we can slog up the comparison between the two machlokesin. Ad kam makom Rav Achi by Yoshia Hosim, Elab Megillah, the Ichtu Vashul Ois Ba'olam. You know what? Rav Achi by Yoshia, at least, is talking about a Megillah that was written for the sake of administering the Shavua and the curse. So, yes, okay, it was written as Lashum, for the name of Ois Ba'olam, the Ois, the curses in the world, in general. Meaning, okay, Rav Achi Bar Yoshia is saying, yes, this one was written specifically for Rachel, so how can we now use it specifically for Leah? Because, forget about specifically Rachel and specifically Leah, it's written with the curses in mind. It's written for the purpose of putting it into the sota water and administering the curse to her.
Regardless
who it is. Aval Torah the Islamic Ksiva, but the Torah is written in order to learn from it. Hachinami Dilema Hakinan. Maybe even Rav Achi Bar Yoshia would say, you can't, it was written for a different purpose.
You think that the
purpose is important, then yeah, you can't say that you can cut out a piece from a Sefer Torah. Okay, the question is, but so it's not necessarily the same machlokes, in other words. Okay, question then becomes, Rav Achi Bar Yoshia Lesley, doesn't Rav Achi Bar Yoshia agree with the din that it says in a Mishnah in Gittin, Kosav L'garash Et Ishto, what if somebody writes a get in order to divorce his wife, V'nimlach, and then he changes his mind, Motzei Ben Iroi, somebody else from the same city meets him, V'amaloi, and he says to him, you know what, Shmi Kishimcha, I have the same name as you, V'shem Ishti Kishem Ishtecha, my wife has the same name as your wife, so you know what, give me that get, and let me use it for my wife. Possible, L'garash, bro, you can't do that, it's possible to use it. It has to be the Shmoy and the Shma. That's the point. So doesn't Rav Achi Bar Yoshia agree with that? Why over here, by Megillah Sota, should he say that it's okay to use a Megillah that is written for one thing? We assume that it's the same thing, because by the get, the Torah says the chos of law, which means law has to be the Shma. By Megillah Sota also uses the word law. The answer is Amri. So they answered Hasam b'chasav la Amar Nachmana, because over there the Torah says he should write for her, meaning but in ksiva l'shma, that it has to be written for her name. Okay, so the question is Hachanami va'asala. Fine, but over here the Torah says he should do to her. He should do for her. The answer is my asiya mechika. Rav Achi bar Yoshi would take the view that what does asiya mean in this case? The doing does not mean the writing. It means erasing. As long as the erasing is done, l'shma, doesn't matter who was written for. So it can be written for Leah and end up being used for Rachel.
Is that expected by all the...
No, the halacha is not like him. The halacha is that the Megillah is not kosher to use for somebody else. But the halacha is... Right, we had a series of incidents from Salima the other day, right.
But the
right. No, but that's the halacha. The point is the halacha is like that, right? Because we have the question. No, because they actually we didn't. We said but in a nami mechika l'shma. The mechika. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, we didn't get into that over there. But yeah, the halacha is like the Tana of our Mishnah that the ksiv has to be l'shma. Yeah.
And the
Mechika? Mechika also, we learned the other day, based on Rava's series of questions, we learned that the Mechika has to be done l'shma also. Tosfos Shantz also discusses the idea that a difference between a get and Megillah Sota is a get has the names written in it. A Megillah Sota, there's no names written in it.
So
therefore, that's another difference over there. You have over there a case where the sofer writes the name of the man and the name of the woman, but if he doesn't have this particular man and woman in mind, then it's no good. When it comes to Megillah Sota, there's no get. Megillah Sota, there's no name written in it. Therefore, Rav Achi bar Yoshia has room to be saying that you could reuse it for somebody else. Yeah. We said in the Mishnah, Einam Aspekus
Lishdei.
That's not the halacha. Einam Aspekus Lishdei Satchapaneh. Although we said she doesn't even have a chance to finish drinking the water before, if she's guilty, then her face becomes pale, etc. So, Mani Rav Shimon. So, who is our Mishnah like? That seems to be according to Rav Shimon. Dama Makar Vesen Chasav Achach Mashka. He says, first you bring the Korban Mincha, and then you give her the drink. Tekamad Le Korban Mincha, so Le Bad Kilamaya. Because we know that until the mincha is brought, the water will not have any effect. Just mincha zikaron, maskeras of it. And the pasuk calls it a mincha of remembrance that brings the guilt to be remembered. The meaning of the guilt is not going to be remembered by the Eibishter, so to speak, and take effect until that mincha is brought. So therefore, if Rav Shimon holds that first you bring the mincha, then you give her the water, therefore our Mishnah fits according to that. As soon as she finishes drinking the water, then automatically it starts taking effect, because the mincha has already been brought. Eimav Seifa. But so fine. That part of the Mishnah seems to be according to Rav Shimon. Ema Sefer, but look at the next part of the Mishnah. Yesh lo schud harita tarlala. We say that if she had the schud, that it suspends her punishment. Asa on the Rabbanan. Not necessarily have to be according to the Rabbanan. Di'i Rav Shimon ha'amar Rav Shimon, because it can't be according to Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon says in the next Mishnah, we talked about this in the first parak. We quoted over there. Rav Shimon says ein schud tarlala mayim amarim. That schud does not suspend punishment by the mayim amarim. So who is it? Is our Mishnah like Rav Shimon or not like Rav Shimon? Okay, I mean, we learned in the first parak, and we're going to learn later on Chavez Chavgimel, that you have actually, that the Rebbe points out over there that even if we say Schus Tola, well, one way of understanding the mission anyway, is that Rebbe is saying even if Schus Tola, she does start swelling up and whatever right away, she just doesn't die from it right away. So, that's what we said, after 3 years, et cetera, yeah.
3 years.
Yeah. So anyway, so who is our Mishnah like? Amr of Chis, the Hamani Rabbi Akiva. Fine, you could say our Mishnah is like Rabbi Akiva. Drama Makrabas and Chasav Achach Mashka. He says, first you bring the Mincha, then you give her the drink. Or it's Chus Savalot Rabbanan. So, in other words, we have the other day we mentioned Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon, both of whom held that you bring the Mincha and then give her the drink. However, Rabbi Akiva does not have to agree with Rabbi Shimon about Ein Chus Torah. He could hold with the other Rabbanan that Chus is Torah. So, good, our Mishnah follows him. I mentioned yesterday, by the way, the famous question that they asked, according to the opinion of Rav Elazar, Rav Shimon, in Zvachim, that the owners are able to pass all the korban. If we're saying the water doesn't take effect until the korban is brought, doesn't she have the ability to pass it with saying that with thinking a wrong thought about it? I mentioned
this.
So if you say that she's the owner of it, which we said yesterday, it seems she is because she's the one who does the tenufa of it. I mentioned yesterday that there's a sefer from Rav Yosef Engel that gives 80 answers to it, and there's many other answers that have been proposed. I had a chance to look up the sefer. One of his answers is that this only applies when the owner has something to do with the actual bringing of the carbon. Here, she's not actually being involved with the actual bringing of it. That's being done by the carbon. So if you say, for example, let's say the owner can pass it while he's shechting it, let's say, because the shechita anybody can do. But the shears, he already... We're not talking about a behemoth. This is barley flour. So
the husband
brings it, but whatever, it's given to her. So it becomes, even if you say she's considered the owner of it, she's not doing it. She's not involved with it at this point anymore. The kohen is the one who does all the avodas with it. Therefore, she doesn't have the ability to pass it. Okay, but maybe not, but not necessarily, because we're saying that to a certain extent she's considered the bialim of it. Right. Yeah. Actually, that was it. Yeah, so that was his second answer. His first answer was that whole concept, even according to the laws of Reb Shimon, what can the owner's pasul only a korban that in a certain sense belongs to them, namely kachim kalim. A mincha is kachim kachim. Therefore, even according to him, it wouldn't work. And then he gives 78 other answers, which we're not going to go through. What? He and the Rav Trevor were contemporaries. They corresponded a lot on things. Yeah. The Mishnah continued, behem omim hotziyu. Of all the people, they would say, take her out, that she shouldn't make the Azorah Tomei. My timer. That's what we're asking. My timer. What's the problem? The Duma Mesa. Is it that they're saying she might die? In that case, the memory of the mess also the Machna Leviyah. So you're telling me that a mess is also to be in Machna Leviyah? Remember, she was never in the Azorah. She was standing in Shaar Nikonar. She was standing in the entranceway of Shaar Nikonar, which is still considered part of the Ezra's Noshim, which is considered Midaraisa, everything up until the other side of Shaar Nikonar is considered Machna Leviyah, the camp of Leviyah.
Even within the Shaar,
that's the point. They deliberately did not give the inside of the Shaar the Kedusha of the Azorah because they needed the Mitzorah to be able to stand there when he's having his Tara, they needed Mechuzer Kippurim to stand over there, etc.
So
the Shaar itself is considered like the Ezra's Noshim. Vatanya, but we learn in the Brayta, Tomim Mes Mutli Kanas L'Machna Leviyah, a Tomim Mes is allowed to go into Machna Leviyah, V'loy Tomim, which means, in the Beis HaMikdash, it means the Harabayis and the Chayil and the Ezra's Noshim.
That's on the other, meaning
including Shaar Nikonar,
right.
Including Shaar Nikonar. The loy tomim mes bilvado. Amru, not only a tomim mes, but afilu mes out. Even the dead body itself is allowed to be in Machna Leviyah. Shenema, up till the end of Shaar Nikonar. Shenema, vayikach Moshe es atmos Yosef ima. It says Yosef took Moshe's bones. Moshe took Yosef's bones with him. With him means ima b'mchitzase in his own private area. Now Moshe was a Levi. He lived in Machna Leviyah. He camped in Machna Leviyah in front of the Mishkan. He had the body. He had the body of Yosef with him. Therefore, the body of Yosef can be in Machna Leviyah. So what are you telling me that we're afraid this sota might die and she's going to be metame the Azorah? What's the problem? A mess is allowed to be in the gate of in Shaar Nikonar or the Ezra's Noshim or whatever.
That's the end of Machna
Leviyah. Yeah, that's the end of Machna Leviyah. Okay, but the point is, when we say Hotziyua, like you've got to take her out right away, especially the version in the printed Mishnayot is actually that they say Hotziyua, Hotziyua, get her out fast. What's the hurry? Okay, but what's the great hurry? What's the great hurry? What do they even need to be saying? Well, okay, of course, once she's dead, they're going to remove her. They're going to bury her. But you know, what's the great rush?
Maybe from
Asher
it was different.
No, the halacha is the halacha. I mean, if a mess is allowed, a mess is allowed.
But we say that the tzaddikim never become tamei.
Okay, there is that, but fine. And, you know, come on, since the pasuk says atmos Yosef imo, you know, we're supposed to be learning a halacha from it. We're supposed to be learning a halacha that a mess is allowed in Machna Leviyah. Anyway, ultimately, the halacha is that it's so. The most a mess is allowed in Machna Leviyah. Which, by the way, when we say, you know, we always say nowadays, we're talking mess, therefore we're not allowed to go into the Arabayas. Technically, that's not really so. technically, because of Thomas Smith, we'd still be allowed to go into some parts of the Hadabias, as we're saying over here. It's really, we wouldn't be able yet. We don't know exactly the Shaunika, that's part of the problem. But it's more also, we have other Thomas, you know, your average person is Tommy with other Thomas as well. But I have read that, for example, you know, the Israeli soldiers need to go on the Hadabias to patrol it. So back after the Six-Day War, when this first became a practical thing, Shlomo Gordon, Alav Shalom, gave the soldiers instructions, and one of them was that they should at least tovel in a mikveh. They should tovel in a mikveh beforehand, so at least that way they take care of other potential tumors and then stay.
What about praying?
What about praying? I mean, you know, if you're there, the pastures, you can pray. But I mean, the Arabs are not happy with it. But I don't know if you said Mayim Chaim or not. I mean, your average person is not a Zav, but yeah. Most men don't need Mayim Chaim, only Azov does.
But I don't know. Is there a different post-king?
There are also, yeah, okay. All right, let's not get into that. Anyway. Okay. Now, Mefoshim asks the question. I mean, okay, so, but Midrabanan, though, it's also for a mess to be anywhere beyond the Chayil. So why aren't we worried about Midrabanan? The answer, Tosfos gives one answer that there's a difference between where you're bringing in a mess versus where the person is already there. There's not such a rush to get them out if they died right there. We're talking about you don't want to bring in a mess and drop on them, but if they're already there, then fine, it's not such a rush. The other thing is the Haitziyua, that it says in the printed Mishnayos, get her out, like it's such a rush. You wouldn't be in such a rush to worry about a Dirabanan. That would have to be something Daraisa. So, I'm going to buy a Shema Tifres Nida. No, the problem is not that she might die. The problem is that because of the shock of that, she might become a Nida. And a Nida is not allowed to be in Machna Leviya. Okay, the question is, remember to be a Susim or Afia. Are you telling me then that the fright of drinking the Meisota is going to loosen her body and make her become Nida? The answer is, Ein yes, Dichtiv, at Tischau Chalam Alkamoid. And because Esther, it says, Esther was very distressed when she heard the news that Mordechai said, the Amar Rav, she appears to Nida. Rav says over there in the Sechta Megillah that it means she became a Nida. The other opinion is there that she miscarried. But for our purpose, what's important is that Rav said that the shock made her a Nida. Okay, the question is, V'hanan t'nan charoda masalekas damim, but we learn a Mishnah in Nida that says that fear stops the blood. You can have a case of a woman who's expected to, because she has a vest, there's a time when she's expected to become Nida, but, for example, if she's in hiding, then she may not. The answer is Tachta Tzomis. A long-term worry stops the blood. That's in that case, for example. She's hiding out on a long-term thing, that the enemies are coming, then that stops it. The Asusa, a sudden panic like this over here with the Meisota, or like Esther, miraculously loosens things up and makes her, hormonally, it's, yeah. Then the Mishnah continued, Yeshla's Chus Taisa Chula, that if she had a Chus, that it would suspend her punishment for a year, or 2 years, or 3 years. Mas Masnissin, Mani Masnissin, who is our Mishnah like that mentions 1, 2, or 3 years? Loi Abba Yosef ben Chanan, v'loi Rav Elazar ber Yitzchak Ish Chagarim, v'loi Rav Yishmael. Doesn't seem to be like any of the Tanoim that we're going to quote in the following Braisa.
3 years?
1, 2, or 3 years. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Im Yesh L'Schus Tolo L'Shloish HaChadoshim, if she has a schus, it suspends the punishment for 3 months. Why 3 months? Kedei HaKoras HaUber. Enough time that if she were to become pregnant, that the baby would be noticeable. It would be noticeable that she's pregnant. Yeah, usually we learned in Yuvamis. Usually you do. I mean, nowadays they have pregnancy tests, but in those days they didn't have such things. Then until you can tell, until you see a baby bump, Divrei Rabbi Yitzchak ben Chanan, Rabbi Elazar ben Yitzchak ish kvar dorim oimer tes chadashim. He says 9 months. Shenemar, because the pasuk says v'nixav 9 months, it can suspend things. Why? Shenemar, because the pasuk says v'nixav v'nizra azara, that if she's pure, then she'll be cleansed of it and she'll have children. From which we learn, in other words, not just we're talking about, he explains, the Mishnah, the Pasuk rather, is not just talking about the case where she's actually innocent of the charges, where then she'll have children, as we'll learn in the next paragraph, but it means also the case where Benixa, where temporarily she's cleansed a bit because of schus that overrides the Meisaita, and how long does that last? The Nizra Zara, the time it takes to have seed, to have a baby. Ulahavan ulema zera yabdeni sukar. In another pasuk, it mentions the word zera. It says the zera, the seed, the descendants of the Jewish people will serve Hashem, who will tell. Meaning zera haroi l'saper. It has to be long enough. It has to be long enough that there should be able to be born a baby who eventually will be able to grow up and be able to speak the praise l'saper, to speak the praises of the Eishter. Meaning 9 months.
How can it become
No, so we're saying, in other words, that if she has scores, that it can suspend things for up to 9 months, long enough that not necessarily she will have a baby, especially if it's nabbed by lechos. But if she were to have become pregnant right before that, let's say, then there would be enough time for the baby to be born full term, and eventually it's a remez in the pulse, basically. It's not saying that she'll actually become pregnant. Yeah, from Zera and Zera, yeah. Rabbi Shmuel Amar Shnei Masach Chodesh. Rabbi Shmuel says it lasts for 12, the maximum is 12 months. But Alpha Pishen Raya L'Dover Zeicha L'Dover, even though we don't have a proof for 12 months, we have a Zeicha, we have a hint here in the Pasuk, Dichtiv, because it says in the Pasuk, the Pasuk in Sefer Daniel describes how Nebuchadnezzar had a very odd dream. He saw this gigantic tree that all of a sudden a malach comes down from Shemayim and says, chop it down, tie it up with iron and copper chains, and it'll stay there for years. It'll become like an animal for 7 years, et cetera, et cetera. So Nebuchadnezzar had no idea what all that's about. He calls him Daniel. Daniel explains to him, the tree represents you. Because you're such a Baal Gaiva, because of your tremendous Gaiva, the Eibishter is going to cut you down to size. You're going to end up going crazy. You're going to go out. You're going to wind up going out and living with the animals for 7 years, and until you realize that the Eibishter runs the world and not you. He's telling the truth. I don't know. So what happens? So Daniel goes on. He says, Lahain Malka. He says, therefore, King, Milki Yishvar Allah, let my advice be good to you. The chatoch mitzdaka pruk, that you should redeem, you should buy out your aperis through giving tzedakah. The ava yosef, and what you did wrong, the mechan aniyim, through having rachmanis on poor people. Hen tehevei alcha l'shleivasa, that way your peace will have an extension. You'll be at peace for a longer time. Rashi meant.
How can you go redeem it for each time?
So first of all, that's what we're saying. It only lasted 12 months. But wait. Rashi says that actually Daniel had a bit of an ulterior motive over here. He realized that there were many poor Jews who were never begging around the doors. So he realized, you know what, now we have a chance. Let him get some money out of Nebuchadnezzar. Actually, though, the Gemara mentioned in Bava Basra that Daniel should not have done this. It was wrong of him to give Nebuchadnezzar advice to get out of his punishment. And therefore, Daniel himself ended up having some consequence for it later.
At the
extent the Gemara gives two possibilities. Either Daniel is Hasach. One opinion is that Hasach was called that Shachachul Megidolase, because he was cut down from his greatness, because originally he had a high position at court, and then in Esther and Mordechai's times, in the times of the Megillah, we find him just a messenger back and forth.
Because of
this, that's the one possibility the Gemara says. Or the other possibility is the fact that he had to go through the whole thing in the lion's den was due to this. Whatever, anyway. The pasuk continues, Kolam Mata on Nebuchadnezzar Malka. All of this happened to Nebuchadnezzar. The pasuk continues, Fas Yachan Treyasar. At the end of 12 months, the pasuk says Nebuchadnezzar is walking on the roof of his palace. He looks out at Babel, this great, wonderful city that I built with my power. Okay, you know what? You're going back to my might and my power and whatever. Get out of here. It's time for you to start serving your punishment. Not at all. He ends up going crazy and running off to the fields and living as an animal for 7 years. Yeah. Anyway, so we see that his punishment was deferred for only 12 months. So you have the maximum of 12 months, even if one's Rebbe Shmuel. Whereas our Mishnah getting 1, 2, or 3 years. So Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi that we find examples of 1, 2, and 3 years in Tanakh. 1 year we have this case with Nebuchadnezzar. 2 years, we have the story of Amnon, the famous story of Amnon who raped his sister Tamar, his half-sister Tamar. And afterwards, the pasuk says 2 years passed before Absalom finally got his chance to assassinate him. What happened during those 2 years? Amnon was busy studying Torah, so that protected him for 2 years. 3 years is, it says, by Achav, after he killed Naboth and took his field, etc. The pasuk continues, for 3 years there was no war between Yisrael and Aram, and then there was a war in which Achav was killed. So he got spared for 3 years
because
of mitzvahs that he did. It doesn't say, but whatever. It just says that all those 3 years he was involved with mitzvahs. No, not learning Torah. Torah was Amnon. Achav was just a office for mitzvahs. He was involved in it. Actually, Gemara mentions, I think, in the Sanhedrin that Achav gave a tremendous amount of tzedakah. As a matter of fact, in the last judgment of him, the Pasuk mentioned that in before that war, they called together the Nevi'im and then whatever. So the Navi Michayu tells him that I saw the Beis in Shemaila judging you, and you had exactly half mitzvahs and half averus. How does a Rosh, like half of half, comes out half mitzvahs? The Gemara says because he gave such a tremendous amount of tzedakah, especially to the Menachamim, that took care of half of his averus. That disposed of half of his averus. Anyway. The answer is Rabbi Shmuel. You can say that our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Shmuel. But Ashkach Kra, however, Rabbi Shmuel also found a pasuk, the Amar Vatani, that says that it can be repeated, that the 1 year that we learned from Nebuchadnezzar can actually be repeated. The pasuk says, Koyam Hashem, Ashlosha Pishe Edom, because of the three Averis of Edom, I'll let them go for that. But the pasuk continues, I won't forgive them the fourth. So we see the Eved is patient up to three times. So therefore, if a person can have 1 year, like Nebuchadnezzar, then he can have a maximum, it can be extended again and again for a maximum of 3 years. So why is this not a complete proof from Nebuchadnezzar and from Edron? Because Zoma Shiny Goyim might be different, because the Eved is not in such a hurry to punish them for their Avedis in Elam Hazah. The Eved would rather save up the punishment for Elam Hazah so they get it all at once. Whereas Jewish people, maybe the Eved would rather give it sooner in smaller doses, so therefore it's not a complete proof. But it's a Zeser.